This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 152, sponsored by MidOhioCon, Discount Comic Book Service, and eMusic.
Searching for some first-time high. I know it's all about perceptions. Did I accept you as my very first mover?
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 152. My name is Connor. I'm here with Josh.
Howdy, howdy.
And we are beside ourselves with glee to have Ron back.
Yay!
Who wrote this script?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's funny, and no one will ever know.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website. We talk about it on this podcast, along with other books of the week and various topics of interest. And before we get started, a quick reminder, warning, this is a review show, so we'll be talking about the books that came out this week. So we'll be talking about plot points and spoilers. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause the show, come back. You'll have more fun if you do.
Wait, we do what now?
Spoilers. Spoilers, Ron. Josh, whichever one you are.
Have we been doing it that way all along?
Oh, shit.
Good Lord. You've ruined so many books for me.
I'm sorry.
I got to start reading my books before we do the show.
That's apparent. Ron!
Yes, sir. Well, it was my pick of the week, and what a pick it was. It was actually a really, really jam-packed week, as my every 3 weeks I recap how the comic books I buy. But it was actually really challenging because there were a couple of really, really strong books that I really would have liked to have picked. But it was one of those we read our books in two distinctly different ways. You guys read the one you like the most last, right?
Ways.
Right.
Connor does this universe sorting thing.
Right.
Yeah. I do by universe.
Well, what I did was I read my books the one I'm most anticipating for, the one that I can't wait to read. I read that first because I'm impatient.
I eat dessert.
Yeah, I eat dessert first, exactly.
Give me that cake, you.
And so
we haven't even had the appetizer yet.
So this week, the first book that I actually read was Marvel 1985, issue number 5, from Mark Miller and Tommy Lee Edwards. And so I read it first because, I mean, first of all, if you look at that cover, you know, while disclaimer, this cover did not actually depict anything that happened in the book. It's a pretty badass cover.
He totally said that to me, by the way. He's like, no, it was my pick, even though the cover didn't happen. Like, he was mad.
I was really mad. It was very upsetting.
Well, he's in love with Dazzler, so
I am. It's Dazzler in that costume of that period. I love that Dazzler. Because Dazzler, when everybody thinks about Dazzler, they think of the whole disco Dazzler and stuff like that. But actually, Dazzler with the short hair and the blue costume was pretty badass. She was pretty cool.
You're making an assumption that anyone thinks of Dazzler.
No, but more often than not, people go with the disco Dazzler.
No, actually, I think of this Dazzler.
Oh, really? Oh, good. Well, you got good taste. So, anyway, so
I think of her that often.
So, but as we've talked about it for the past, you know, few issues, this, you know, kind of high concept postmodern book that Miller's tale that Miller's telling about, you know, what if the Marvel supervillains came into the real world? And with the last issue, issue four, it ended with a cliffhanger of the little boy Toby discovering the doorway into the Marvel universe, and that's where this issue picks up. And what happens is that you know, in the small town, and I forget where it is. In my head, it's mid-Atlantic because that's where I'm from. But it's some small suburban town, and the supervillains are now just completely out in the open, and they're just laying waste to the town. It's just completely, you know, they're. Basically, and it was great is because there's a couple of scenes where Miller actually described what's going on, and he says, you know, like, you know, Batroc the Leaper is burning down a church, and the Sentinels are frying children, and these guys are in hold up in a bar killing these people, and it just completely, like, so, you know, when you think of comic book villains, you think somewhat kind of, you know, they're kind of hokey and they do stupid things and stuff like that, but put them in the real world and they're just like out, like one villain walked by just with a severed head, like they're just out and out killing people. And it's really kind of brutal, and the town has really no defense, and so like everyone in the town is trying to escape and they're trying to flee. So just pretty much hell in a handbasket. And then Toby, switch over to Toby's in the Marvel universe, and he, you know, his great idea is he'll go find the Avengers and they'll help save his town. And so he stumbles into the Marvel universe. And what the big distinction, the big thing that really jumped out for me, and it's totally an obvious thing, but was the artistic manner in which Tommy Lee Edwards, you know, depicted the Marvel universe versus the real universe. In, you know, the real universe. So the real world, he's using, you know, very dark colors and dark tones and kind of a little more erratic, sketchier kind of style. You know, I don't want to say it's realistic because it's not, but it's visually different than what he does in the Marvel universe. What he does in the Marvel universe is the color is a lot brighter. It's a little more simpler. And even the way he drew people are simpler. There are less lines involved. And, you know, it's an obvious kind of thing. It's like, okay, well, he's in two different universes, so they're going to visually make it look different. But this just so nailed it. It just totally it accomplished that device, and in such a, you know, classy style that it just totally blew me away. And it's kind of funny to see Toby going through the Marvel Universe. And he goes to Avengers Mansion and he finds Jarvis. And he says, "I need Captain America. I need the Avengers." And Jarvis kind of shoves him, you know, gives him an Avengers pin. And goes, "Thanks for visiting the mansion," and kind of sends him on his way. And then he goes to the Fantastic Four and he explains that this is a, you know, there's a big multidimensional crisis. And the little robot receptionist is like, "Well, there are currently three multidimensional crises. Please fill out this form."
And they give him a litany of paperwork.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was a nice touch.
Yeah, and so then finally, you know, at a loss of what to do, he runs to the Daily Bugle and he manufactures a way to meet Peter Parker and basically says, "I know who you are. I know you're Spider-Man. I need help." And in a really, I thought a really well written kind of exchange between the kid and Peter Parker, and kind of, you know, recruits Spider-Man into the fray, and then it ends. And it, you know, there's one more issue left in the series, and I mentioned in my review on the site that I know what's going to happen, or at least I presume I know what's going to happen, is that the Marvel heroes are going to come back with him and they're going to clean up and fix everything and make it all better. But
maybe the cover will actually occur then.
Yeah, maybe. And there, it's Miller, so there's a chance that might not happen, so I definitely admit that, but probably that's what's going to happen. But what's really great is that, and like I also said in my review, is that this whole series is just, it just feels like a love letter to the idea of loving comics, of, you know, this idea of reading comics and knowing these characters so intimately, and then the question of what if they become real and what if you can interact with them. And it's funny to see, you know, Toby talking to Spider-Man roll off all the facts he knows about his life. He's like "You live with your aunt, Green Goblin killed your girlfriend, you're going out with the Black Cat," and like all these like intimate details that he knows by heart from reading the comics. And it's, you know, it's this love of comics and this love of the stories that we've read for all these years put into a position of actually being able to interact with them isn't a terribly new and, you know, amazing idea, but it's just done. I think this has just been done so well. And when this is all done and collected in this, you know, in the trade paperback format or hardcover format, it's just going to be for any Marvel fan, it's going to be a fun kind of must read, like right up there with Marvels and right up there with, you know, kind of like the classic kind of stories. And, you know, considering what I first heard about 1985, you know, years ago, this is totally exceeded my expectations of what Miller would deliver. So after reading it, all I could do was gush all over the internet about it.
Ew. I will say I do not think that it is fair for the rest of the books that came out this week for this book to have come out when you had the pick. It was created specifically for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And nothing really had a chance. I mean, it was a good issue. It was very. I almost do not believe that Mark Miller is writing this, but.
Well, yes, because Galactus showed up in the last page.
Well, yeah, that was the other thing, is that Miller's kind of going to the Galactus well a little bit, Mud.
He did the Fantastic Four 2 months ago, and now this one.
And again this
Wolverine
week.
Next week.
Again, yeah. This week as well, yeah. Is Galactus in Wolverine next week, or?
He will. That's,
hey, he's just a big dude looking for a meal.
Yeah, exactly. He just hungers, that's all. This issue ends with in the real world, you know, the kid's father, Toby, is, you know, talking, you know, he's trying to help save his mother and Toby's mother, and it's kind of his narration. He's like, well, of course he'd be here, you know, of course, you know, a new world. And then it just shows Galactus on the landscape, and just a big close up on his face, and just saying, I hunger. This is made for me and made for other Marvel fans, and it's kind of, you know, it is a little unfair because I really did like Fantastic Four. I really did like Powers. After reading Proof, I was blown away, you know, and I loved Chung on New Avengers. But, like, ultimately, this is the one that I was like, oh, this is so much fun to read. And that's what I look for in my weekly book. So am I the only one reading it, or are you guys not even bothering? Or?
No, I read it.
Oh, okay. What did you think?
It's a solid 4-star book. I mean, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's Marvel porn, so I wasn't surprised. But I wouldn't denigrate it. It was a fun issue.
Yeah.
Exactly what he said. Just to really come with the really well-known conversation we're known for, ditto.
I think probably the second best issue after the first issue, and I really liked all the little touches in the series. I liked when he went into the world and had to deal with the bureaucracy of the Fantastic Four and the Jarvis and the event. Those all little nice touches. It was a very nice issue.
I found myself, though, wondering, if he's in the comic book world, do the rules of reality work the same way, or does coincidence help him out? Like, because if you go, maybe not in 1985, but if it was like 1965, like, he would have gotten the Fantastic Four. You know what I mean? Like, well, it was. I remember thinking, oh, that's actually a little realistic, as opposed to.
Well, it's 85 because it's the 85 era superheroes, the Black Suit, Spider-Man, and everything.
Nothing wrong with that. Just got me thinking. No.
One thing I really liked about this, from an artistic standpoint, was. And this is so just simple, but they actually drew Peter Parker as a photographer.
Yep.
Like, he had all the gear, he had the clothes.
The hat.
And you never actually see, when he goes on photographer duty, he's just wearing his normal clothes, he doesn't have gear or anything. And this is the first time it's ever been like, hey, he's a photographer, give him photographer's gear.
Yeah, I can't say that I've read anything Tommy Lee Edwards has done, but I'm going to look for the next thing he does after this.
I think it's all clear to everybody that Peter Parker, at a stage where he was young and dating the Black Cat, is a better Peter Parker.
Exactly.
And I'm going to just say that as fact.
He was instantly more engaging in this issue.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think clearly that if they were to make a comic book like that, it would be better and sell more. And that's not open for discussion or interpretation.
I feel like there's a lot of good sexual tension between Peter and Toby.
Oh, that's not good. But Daredevil was, I mean, not Daredevil, Dazzler wasn't in the book at all, and neither was Storm. I was very upset. None of the X-Men.
None of the people on the cover in it. She-Hulk.
I know.
Spider-Girl.
Spider-Woman, yeah. Is that Spider-Girl or Spider-Woman?
Spider-Woman.
That's Spider-Woman, right? Yeah, that's the, not the Jessica Drew one. That's the, what's her name? I forget her name.
Spider-Woman 2.
The redhead, yeah. And it was She-Hulk and the Fantastic.
Great if they called her that.
Yeah,
hello, Spider-Woman 2. It's I. Shut up.
That's from the Marvel
handbook. Yeah, exactly. So, I really liked it. But it was, you know, a very close contender was Mark Miller's other book that came out this week, which is Fantastic Four number 560. Which, you know, I know I was really, really, I was really, really hard, not really digging the hard on, and I was really not digging the first arc of this, but I am loving this arc, and I really, really like this issue a lot.
I think this issue is the second best issue since the one I picked as pick of the week. This was a really good issue.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it earlier, this week was strong. I had like 4 5-star books this week.
Yeah.
It was a really strong week, but this was a really, really good issue. This was a... At the end of the last issue, someone had kidnapped, was it Johnny?
Yep.
It was Johnny.
The Human Torch.
And we find out it was the Hulk. And we're like, how is that possible? And we find out in this issue that it's the Hulk's son from the future.
Yeah.
From the future where the world has died. You know, that we've destroyed the world. Almost everybody's dead. And just some heroes are left. They go back to the past just to fix the future. To be able to bring all the people who are alive back to the past.
Yeah, there are like 8 billion people on Earth that they need to save. They need to get off of Earth, and so they figure we'll bring them back to the past.
Have you noticed that Mark Miller's repeating himself?
In what sense?
Well, you were just talking about Galactus showing up a couple of times, and then so there's a Hulk son from the future.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's intentional. According to every report, he's intentionally linking things thematically in all of his books.
Yeah.
All
right. Or just, you know, using coupons.
Or he's going to link them all, not just thematically, but also tie them all in continuity-wise, too. I mean,
that would just make a little heart flutter.
It totally would, yeah.
And then the big reveal in this issue is that the new Fantastic Four nanny is actually a future Sue Storm.
Yep, and she lays waste on the Fantastic Four, which is kind of cool. I really, really liked the villain explaining what they're doing to Johnny while he's captive, and then his reaction, and then Johnny's kind of being sarcastic and baiting him, and they're kind of telling him what their plans are and everything, and then he's held captive, strapped against this machine above Galactus and behind Dr. Doom. And I just love that he pulls Doom into it. He's like, "Hey, Doom, what do you think of this?" And Doom just swears he's going to kill everyone tonight. Doom has barely said a word in this series, but every time he has, it's been great. So,
yeah,
Miller can make me laugh. I give him that credit.
He writes a good Doom.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does.
And I think the art was stronger. I think everything about this issue was stronger than it has been. It was a really good issue.
Yeah. It's been interesting. It's been interesting to see. I mean, I don't know whether it's noticeable or not, but it seems like it's a, the inks, the people inking has rotated a lot from issue to issue, and I don't really think I've noticed the difference because it gives the credits the inks to Brian Hitch, and this issue is Andrew Curry and Matt Banning, who I don't believe worked on the last issue, but Hitch is always mentioned in the inking, so I'm curious to see whether he's setting the guideline and then they're following it and how much that affects. But if you go back to like the first issue of this, of this run that was inked by Paul Neary, you would probably, I would want to look at that art, see about any subtle differences. And I wonder if that's helping it speed things along and keep on schedule or not.
Well, I feel like the art's tighter in this issue than normal.
Maybe all of our jokes about Paul Neary at the beginning of the arc, let's put him off.
Maybe.
I don't remember what the joke was, but I remember we laughed.
Yeah.
Well, there was a Brian Hitch running down the Triborough Bridge with a bunch of paper.
Right.
I don't remember what else.
I don't remember the context at all. Ah, well.
I'm sure someone will remind us of that.
My it was tough. When I got to the end of my books, I went to the website to decide on my pick of the week. Which is a whole new bit of stress now that I have, now that we have in the site. I didn't have to worry about that in every 2 out of 3 weeks. Now I do. I ended up going with Powers, number 30. It was a tough decision.
Powers was really good. I think that if they ended Powers with this issue, I would be totally okay. Like, I really feel as like this is like the end of the first arc of the ongoing story. It brought this long story with Dina and to a close, and it resolved everything that I was curious about what's been going on. Like, I don't know where they're going to take it from here.
As much as I like Dina, I hope we don't see her again, at least for a long time.
Oh, no, we're done.
I feel like her story is over.
Yeah.
Well, unless she comes back. The thing is, and this is the thing that they kept saying over and over again, they kept repeating the idea of reinventing herself.
Yeah.
Make yourself again. Do a thing. So if he drops that hint and leaves that note and then doesn't follow up on it, I would be very, very surprised.
Right.
Well, see,
when she does come back, she's got to be a different thing.
Well, just to recap it. So this is really like the epilogue. And last issue, they solved the problem, whatever, who was killing people and Trip Hammer, and they figured out the virus and all this stuff. And this kind of dealt with the repercussions. And it starts off with a lot of information about people, saying if you have the Powers virus, come get cured and all this kind of stuff. And then it goes into her in a meeting with the police officials. And, she's probably figuring she's going to get the book thrown at her. And they just basically say, sign here. Here you go. You were undercover the whole time. Here's a check for your back pay. And the check is like for $3 million. And they're like, and you're no longer a cop. Thank you. Goodbye. And she gets totally like bought off. Like, and then she talks to her captain and finds out that, she could have sued and, gone after them. But they, she took the exit that was given her, which I can't say I wouldn't either in that situation.
You take it and get out of there.
Yeah, I thought it was a very realistic clever way of ending her of her dealing with it, because her going to, you know, be put on trial and going to jail just wouldn't have felt right, you know. And like, this feels like something that would really happen in the real world. Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting is that basically there's two parts to the issue. Actually, it sort of goes back. Is that the first half of it, you're feeling really bad for her. And you're like, well, she got away with all this stuff, and she's feeling bad, and blah blah blah. And then Walker comes in and has this conversation with her, just about, you know, you have to do what's right. You have to do what you have to do.
Yep.
You know, over and over, and basically takes the weight off her. She's like, okay, everything's fine. She's going to be happy. And then, like, the very end is, no, she can't shake it.
Yeah, yeah.
She still did. She's taking responsibility for herself. She's going to, I mean, she doesn't have enough money to be Batman, but she's got $3.7 million and a chip on her shoulder.
She's going to be back, yeah. But do you see what I mean? Like, yes, there's a wealth of stories left. There's her coming back. There's Walker and his, you know, Green Lantern-esque powers.
Well, that's why you can't end the book.
Well, yeah, but there are still stories to be had. But if they ended the book, like, this would be an okay ending. You know, I don't know, for me at least. That was the thought I had when I finished it.
A huge dangling story about the main character.
Well, yeah, but
yes and no. Yeah. But it's not like there's a cliffhanger. It wouldn't necessarily. Yeah. He's starting a new chapter of his life.
Why are you both trying to cancel one of my favorite books?
No, I'm not trying to cancel.
I'm just saying it had they been in the end. My favorite scene was that middle conversation between the two of them and the double page spread with the. With the dialogue balloons that swerve through the entire scene was like vintage, old school Bendis, and I just loved it. He knows these characters so well, and I finished it. It was you know, so happy. You know, it's just one of those Powers issues that's so meaty and full of dialogue, and just feels so good afterwards.
I'm looking at that two page spread, and Oeming's, like, I love Walker as he exists now. Like, I don't know what he's doing different than before, but his hair is different. I mean, it just seems a little more accessible.
He's thinned him out a little bit. I think he made the face a little younger looking or something.
Yeah. There's something noticeably different, but I liked Walker to begin with, but like after that conversation, I was like, oh, I love this character. He's awesome. So,
you know, what was interesting about that page is that those balloons, I mean, that's a lot of dialogue to put in a page.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a ton. And at a certain point, it sort of goes down and then up. And then I'm like, am I reading this right? Yeah, I think I am. Going around. Like, when Eliopoulos got those damn, like, oh, you got to be kidding me. five pages of dialogue.
But he nailed it. I mean, it's that much. I mean, because it's not easy to take that amount of dialogue and, like, the conversation, like, reading it, the conversation flows, and the way the balloons are placed, it's, you know, I know, you know, both Bendis probably talked to him a lot and they figured out how to do it, but it just flows so smoothly. And you're right, it's a ton of text, but it's not unreadable. Which is, you know, some other people have a hard time doing that. So
I gotta say that I know people make fun of Bendis for this kind of dialogue scenes, but this is I miss when almost every book he wrote was like this.
Yeah,
I mean, he writes this back and forth dialogue like nobody else in comics, and I miss when this was like that, and Alias was like this, and Daredevil was like this. I just miss that period about 5 years ago where everything he wrote was just long strings of dialogue.
Right.
Nope. Now you get like a 3-year event.
Well, we're gonna get to that in a bit, but I think Dina can come back, but I really hope if she does, it's not for a while.
Yeah.
I feel like they need to let her go for a while, and then when she does come back, it's more impactful than
I agree.
She comes back and she's angry.
I mean, I know it's easy for us to say, like, well, you know, the next story arc should focus on Walker and his powers or whatever, but it's going to be something that we completely have not thought of, that we don't know anything about. It's going to be monkey fucking again. I mean, like,
even if she comes back in 6 issues, that's going to be 2-3 years. So don't worry.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Oh, jeez.
Until then, the torso killer will pop up.
All right. So moving on.
Hellboy.
Hellboy. The Crooked Man, part 3 of 3, started really strong, and it ended stronger than it started. This was a really satisfying ending to a 3-issue miniseries, I felt, which is almost unusual. Like, I was surprised. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's ending really well.
It was because after the first two, I was kind of like, well, where is this going and how is it going to end? Because we've only got one left. And it ended up being very satisfying.
Yeah, and what was cool is that even after it was over, apparently we were only half – like after the main sort of confrontation was over, we were only half through the story. We still had time to do a little wrap-up epilogue thing, which, like, I just felt like I got a lot of comic book with this. And, you know, if you had asked me a little while back whether I think Richard Corbin was the right person to draw a Hellboy story, I would have said I'm not sure. but I loved this. I thought this was fantastic. This sort of confrontation between, I don't know the guy's name, but the main human guy and this preacher and the crooked man who's like a demon devil kind of thing outside the church was just a ton. It was just a lot of fun. It was just like good versus evil and willpower and like the poor stuff the preacher has to go through where the devil's trying to tempt him over and over again. He turns him young. He gives him his sight back. And you know, the whole time it's just Hellboy in the middle. All right, I'll take care of this. It's fine. He was like, Hellboy was so not the driving force of the story. Like he was.
Well, it's interesting because he was young. He's younger, right? I mean, it's still younger Hellboy. So he's still. I wonder what older Hellboy would do with this scenario. Would he have waited as long as he did to just whap the? I loved the consecrated shovel, and then Hellboy just whaps him.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I guess that's the thing I'd actually kind of forgotten about, that we're looking at a 13, 14 year old Hellboy here. Maybe no older than 20, I guess. Even though he grew up fast, but fun stuff.
The 50s, it was really good. The art was just beautiful. I found myself just marveling over every page.
Absolutely, and tonally, like the art just set it up, and it's really, I don't know, it felt different than most Hellboy stories, but yet it was appropriate. So it was just a great issue. This is really good Hellboy. If you're looking to get into it, these three issues are probably, you could, like most of the Hellboy, you can read them on their own, I think.
This is the first Hellboy I bought that wasn't in trade form since it originally came out. It was
Did you guys pick up Back to Brooklyn?
I did.
Yo.
I know Connor did.
I'm always in Brooklyn, so I picked it up.
Because he was going back there.
I actually was.
Ironically.
It's very meta.
Up Manhattan was like, this is perfect.
It's telling me what to do.
Garth Ennis scripted and co-plotted by Garth Ennis and Jimmy Palmiotti, scripted by Garth Ennis, with artwork by
good luck with this one.
Ihalo Vukolic.
That's Vukolic. Good. Yeah, good job. Yeah.
From Image Comics, 5-issue miniseries, gangster story. I wasn't sure if I could place when it was. I guess now.
Yeah, it seems now. They got the modern cop cars.
Yeah, it's now.
Basically, it's one of those stories that throws you in right as it's already going. They got a gangster, like the number two guy in the mob, is in the interrogation room, and he's willing to give up everybody, and you don't know why, and the cops don't know why, and it's a big deal, and a bunch of cops get killed, so they let him go, and we start the story.
They let him go because he calls home and the number one guy in the mob picks up and says, if you talk, I'm killing everybody in your family. So he says, I got to go back to Brooklyn.
Right.
And shoots some bitches with a shotgun.
And then the music starts. Yep. I thought this was really fun if for no other reason than I think Garth Ennis' dialogue is really fun on stuff like this.
The dialogue was just great. I was
exactly.
He gets right into this character's. And right away, you know all these characters, and the back and forth, and the mob guy sitting around at the card table in Brooklyn, you know, just bullshitting, and just everything. He just nails this dialogue. He knows this gritty world, and it was fantastic.
Did either of you by any chance get to read Jimmy Palmiotti's two pages at the end of it?
Yes,
I like Jimmy.
How can you not?
I know. It's that last paragraph about himself where he just kind of spits in the face of people who move to Brooklyn and say that they're from Brooklyn. Just that made me laugh. But it's really cool to see. Like, this is obviously a one of those passion projects for Palmiotti. And it's interesting to see him kind of hand, you know, like wise, not wise, but like hand the scripting to Garth Ennis, like one of the best in the business. You know, like that's, you know, it's kind of, you know, I would say, you know, more egotistical creators would, you know, say this is my baby and I'm going to write it, but you know, he came up with the story and said and let Garth go to town on it, and that's a really wise decision. Not that Jimmy's a bad writer, but if you can work with Garth,
what's so funny is Jimmy is such, he doesn't, you wouldn't think so, but he's such a important force in comics. Like he's been there for all these important things, but like he's the inker.
Yep.
Or he was. Well, I know that, but he still can though. But like he's. Like when you look at great runs, he was the guy inking it. He didn't need the spotlight of it, or he was plotting it, but he didn't need to script it. Or, you know, he was in charge of Marvel Knights. Like the guy's got a lot of talent, but he doesn't need to be the guy in front. Like he's not that attention seeking.
Totally, yeah.
Which I love that ethic about him, I suppose.
Yeah.
I didn't love the art in this.
Yeah, I wasn't totally, you know, all about the art. I thought it worked. You know, it told the story.
I thought at times it worked better than other times.
Yeah.
And it, you know what it had is one of these things that with guys who don't have a lot of, this is the guy's first real published work. And there's this thing that I notice in some comics that are where the artists aren't as good or as seasoned. There's this weird arm foreshortening thing that happens. Like the arms just never look right.
You're obsessed with that.
It's the thing I always notice. Yeah. It's when the arms just look too short or too small or something like that.
Yeah.
I just keep noting. And in this, it almost – it's not really photorealistic, but sometimes the stuff is as stiff as photos.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
There were a couple of panels where I was like, oh, that's a photo reference. Like, that was, you know, I know exactly what you mean by that.
But it doesn't look like – doesn't like the faces are exaggerated and a little more cartoony, so it doesn't really look like photo reference. Like, it looks like there was a photo and he drew it from the photo rather than trace the photo.
Right.
I suppose, but there it's a little stiff. That's the only thing that – it could get better. I like the coloring. I think the – and you know, like the, he did the whole package of it, so the coloring of it makes it – sort of realistic, I suppose.
The tone and everything, yeah.
It's almost gray tone, almost sepia.
Yeah, yeah. I do got to say that, you know, the scene at the end with the mob boss and the hooker, aside from the Garth Ennis humor in the beginning of the scene, it was really the phone conversation that he has at the end of it where, you know, this mob boss, he's doing it with a hooker and some one of his guys come in because he has a phone call and he's on the phone with his mother. And, you know, it, like, that's a very accurate phone call. Like
he nailed it.
I mean, like, I aside from the killing people and the violence and stuff, talking about that, but the, you know, for crying out loud, ma, like, that's, you know, I've had that conversation with my mother. I know other people from Brooklyn and New York who've had that exact conversation, and like the tone and the pace of the conversation, I just thought nailed it. And that's obviously, it's got to be, I mean, Garth Ennis is a great writer, but that's got to be Jimmy Palmiotti's influence. So, yeah, no,
I don't know.
It's a fun one.
So. Ennis, man.
And this is good. Whew.
He's really like this, and it's 5-issue mini. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah. So Back to Brooklyn, it came from Image Comics, but also came from Image Comics was Proof number 12, which made me squeal with glee at the end.
I got to tell you, it made me squeal with glee, and I don't even know why.
No way, really?
I'm shocked. I got to the end and I thought, all right, Ron loves this, Josh hates this.
No, this probably would have been my pick of the week.
I can't believe you liked it.
I was like, you can do that? Because I just wasn't expecting it. Like, you expect it in some books. Basically, next issue, he's going to feature Savage Dragon.
That's kind of burying the lead. Basically, in this issue, it was the third issue in this arc, I think. So Proof, the main character, Proof, John Prufrock, he's investigating some weird church people or whatever, and he calls in and you know, has this long conversation with the preacher guy and discovers this big monster that they've been keeping. And as soon as he gets free, he calls in for backup, and finally the backup comes. And on the last page, the helicopter lands, and just in the last panel, it's Dragon. In a suit, like Dragon works for the people that Proof works for. Really,
and it's very tiny. Like, yeah. It's not a splash page.
It's not
a big heroic pinup of Savage Dragon.
Oh no, it's maybe like 3 inches by one inch and a half. Yeah, it's like tiny. Yeah.
So subtle. I love that.
It was so subtle that like I literally did like a triple take. I went, huh? No. And then I didn't even see the back cover, which is promoting the next issue, which shows him prominently on the cover. Like, I'm glad I didn't see that because it was a total surprise that I completely didn't expect or see coming. So,
besides that, though. Great issue.
Oh, totally.
Like, look at the very first page of this, and that is like, it's like an edgy Dave Gibbons.
Interesting.
I mean, look at that. That's comic booking right there.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
It's 9-panel grid, you know, like the first panel's black, and they're opening up, looking down a manhole cover, and it's just like this little conversation, and there's the pauses in it. It's really nicely done.
Yeah.
I'm in love with this book, as you know.
It's so, so good. So awesome. So if you're not reading Proof, you definitely need to get out there and pick it up. So I want to tell you all about the Mid-Ohio Con. It's coming up the weekend of October 4th and 5th in the greater Columbus area. It's going to be at the Greater Columbus Convention Center in Columbus, Ohio. It's going to be Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. It's $15 to get in for one day, $25 for the weekend. Or if you feel like being a VIP, you can pay $100 and get special access and some cool stuff. They've got a ton of cool people that are going to be there. Chris Claremont, Alan Davis, Joe Kubert, Chris Eliopoulos, Lou Ferrigno, Jason Mewes, Ethan Van Sciver. I just slide Jason Mewes in there like he's supposed to be there. Like, that's, you know. David Mack, Billy Tan. So there's going to be a ton of great people. And what's really cool, Mid Ohio Con is one of those. It's definitely one of those conventions that are like Heroes Con or Emerald City Con that is very. It's in a smaller city. It's a smaller convention, but it allows you a lot of access to these creators, and it's can be
comics.
Exactly. It's all about comics, and it can be a really special time if you choose to attend. So go to www.midohiocon.com. It's all one word, midohiocon.com. And if you're in the greater Ohio area, you have to go to this convention, October 4th and 5th. So,
yes.
Excellent. So so New Avengers number 45.
Ooh.
Sucked.
This was the worst New Avengers issue I've ever read.
It probably was. I have to agree with you. I love Jimmy Chung and his.
No, and I love it. It was beautiful. Yeah. It was absolutely beautiful.
It was totally, totally beautiful. So basically this was going back in time, watching the Skrulls infiltrate, and it starts with, you know, the White Flash of House of M, and it shows how the Skrulls dealt with being thrown into the House of M environment. Which
story that didn't to be told.
Yeah. Which
anyway.
I didn't want to be reminded of it. I didn't want to be, you know, I was kind of better off forgetting House of M existed. But we got reminded of it. So
I say that maybe it did need to be told because that's going to have something to do with the end of the story, but I wish it did. I mean, I didn't read House of M, so I was like doubly like, oh, why am I reading? What is this? Why are they in stupid uniforms? Like, I sorted it out. But
was Hawkeye wearing that weird costume?
Yes.
Back then?
Yes. In the House of M world, that was Hawkeye's costume. The weird right. kind of pointy, yeah, nose thing. Yeah, yeah.
I just thought maybe he drew the wrong costume.
No. That's an accurate costume. So
it looked great, but ugh. Yeah. So ready for this to be over with.
Yeah.
All right, we're past it.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Superman, Batman 52, which is part 2 of 2 with a little tiny mini superhero storyline. And this one focused more on the villain's side. They also came through the portal that Mr. Mixie's Piddlick and Bat might set to bring these little heroes over. And it was alternately really funny, and then also there was some serious business where the villains start investing. And apparently in the little tiny world, nothing bad happens. When you shoot a gun at somebody, you never can hit them. And the bullets bounce off everybody if it does hit them. And they're always falling on banana peels. They never get away. So here, in the regular superhero world, the rules don't apply. And so the little Joker is excited. Little Lex Luthor is excited. And Joker gets his hands on a real gun and ends up accidentally shooting some of his own villains when he tries to test out whether or not he can kill people. And it was just really, really imaginative, really, really funny, really fun. It was just one of the more refreshing storylines in a while. And then also a little tragedy when Superman, mini Superman dies, saving everybody.
Aw.
Yeah, it was very funny but very heartfelt.
And,
but then the weird thing at the end is that they teleport all the people back to their dimension, but little Joker stays behind.
Ooh, there you go. Someone always stays behind.
What will that mean? But he goes to Arkham Asylum, and then he and the regular Joker share a laugh together.
Nice. he's gonna like adopt him like a son.
Yeah. Any joke.
But if you see these two issues, people need to check these out. They're really, really fun.
Yeah, I've heard that. I'm a part of those for you. They look really, they sound really intriguing. So
fantastic art.
So Daredevil number 111.
Dotson.
Now the cover, yeah, had Dotson. The cover, you know, this starts the story arc of Lady Bullseye part one, and I got the cover with the Terry Dodson art, not the David Aja art. And then I opened up the book, and I knew that Michael Lark was not doing this arc. So I kind of going into this, I was like, oh, I wonder how this is going to be. Apparently, Michael Lark has changed his name to Clay Mann.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't tell any difference at all. And I thought the art was great. The Clay Mann really stepped in and kept the tone of the book. And despite this being about Lady Bullseye, I thought it was a really good issue. So
it was, the Lady Bullseye thing wasn't that bad.
No.
I mean, there was a lot of reaction to it. Like, before anything had happened, which is a common comic book reader trait. This sucks. You actually haven't read it yet. and so, while in concept, maybe it doesn't seem like the most attractive thing, but, I mean, at least we've gone from sulky Matt to adulterer Matt.
I was cheering when he hooked up with
Dakota. He got back on the wagon real quick.
Yeah, big time.
He can't help it. He's not that unlike Dick Grayson. Don't forget. I mean, he can't even see it, and it's throwing itself at him. Whoa. You know, the Lady Bullseye thing, the story's plausible, whatever. They need somebody to have him fight. And another girl to be.
I love the morning after when he wakes up and he's saying, "Oh God, oh God." He goes, "You cheated on your wife. Your wife was in a mental institution because of you." It's like,
yeah, but they still stuck that little bit in at the end where he's like, "And how come it doesn't feel like it's that wrong?"
That good.
One. It's because she was.
That was a very needed panel because she was extremely attractive.
Yeah, she was. Well, she was a former model. Yeah. So.
And also, she made me. Go ahead.
His marriage is a farce.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And he knows it, and we all know it, and that's great.
I know it. You know it. American people know it. This issue made me miss Bullseye.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I wish that Norman Osborn wasn't trapped in the Thunderbolts, and I wish that Bullseye wasn't trapped in the Thunderbolts. I don't care about the Thunderbolts, but I would like to see Bullseye and Daredevil.
Yeah.
I'd love to have Brubaker writing more Bullseye. I'd love to have that happen.
Well, I wouldn't count it out. It can't be. You know, it can't be forever. So. So we were talking about Marvel 1985, and you were saying the comic book was written for me. Yes, but more specifically, I think Abnett and Lanning are writing Nova for me.
They're writing it for me, too.
Well, Nova number 17 features Darkhawk on the cover and prominently in the issue, so I bought 25 copies of this issue.
How long have you been sitting on that joke?
about 2 days.
You're going to love scribble, scribble, scribble.
but ultimately, this wasn't. I mean, this could have been a slam dunk for the pick of the week, but I thought it was a solid issue, but it wasn't amazingly great. It was just
This pick of the week?
Because it didn't move me the way 1985 did, like kind of emotionally. This was kind of fun. I did have a little continuity problem because the last time we saw Darkhawk, he was in that the Losers series by C.B. Sobolski, and he was like kind of, you know, not using his powers anymore, and was, you know, that whole thing. And then they just explained that, and he's like, "Well, when I finally registered, they signed me here," and it's like, all right, well, okay. So the continuity nerd in me got a little annoyed, but I love it when Nova goes to Earth, and I love it when he goes to his parents and his family. It just cracks me up.
There's one great panel in that I noticed where there's the bulletin board of Rich's brother, and there's like a bunch of pictures of him and his parents and him and Nova, and there's that one where like the brother is standing too close to the camera. It's like the mistake picture, and I was like, that is great art right there.
Yeah, it was well done. So.
Good stuff. I had fun with it, and the world mind thing. I mean, it was totally like comic book science of getting Nova back. Well, let me see if I can, or the world mind back. Let's see if I can do it. Okay, bring it into a big computer. Problem solved.
Yeah,
stuff. But these are still the most fun parts of Secret Invasion.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the outside of Secret. I mean, this is loosely associated with Secret Invasion in that Nova goes to check the Skrulls who are attacking his brother's, you know, research facility, and Darkhawk is protecting it, and it's loosely affiliated. But it's the way Secret Invasion should be. So,
well, that's exactly it. Is that it felt like the lights go out and the Skrulls are at the door, and this is their invasion, and they're attacking, and it's scary. And why am I not feeling this in the Avengers books?
Yeah.
Because they're backwards.
Exactly.
They're going backwards. They're not going forwards. They're not telling
the story. But this hasn't happened yet in those books.
Yeah. Right, but it's happening. It's not what has happened in the past. It's still.
So I'm just reading the Avengers books, though. I don't know that this is what it's like.
Yeah.
Because I only know this because of like this and Captain Britain and things like that. And that's
Black Panther.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like those are the books that are fleshing it out more, possibly more than they should have to.
Yeah.
But it was fun. So.
All right, cool. So Captain America number 34 looks to have closed the chapter finally on Act 3.
In
a rather quick fashion. My head was spinning a little at the end of it. A lot happened.
Yeah, almost too much.
Yeah.
And so, okay, well, okay, she's gone. It's fixed. There it is. Zola.
Yep. Yep. But it was still good. I mean, it's quality. So
you know what I could stand more of is the Bucky in action trying to figure shit out.
Either that or the Bucky Black Widow romantic comedy.
Yeah, that's also fun. I don't see the Black Widow sitting around watching TV.
Me neither.
I don't know.
Or straddling
him. I like the bits where like Bucky's still not quite good at this. I think that's a lot of fun for whatever reason. Like, because you're in the Captain America uniform and then he gets to be redeemed a little bit. It's all good stuff.
Yeah.
I think this issue was really good. But I think at this point we're at a book with too many characters.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's too many storylines. So hopefully now that we've ended this, we can just focus on Bucky and focus on a couple of people around him, but not to the extent. I mean, we wrapped up like four or five storylines. Let's just I mean, I think at this point you're almost in at the point of being in like a long-term relationship where you're still happy, but you got to work to excite yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You know, like I don't dislike the book, and I would never say a bad thing about it, but I'm finding it more difficult to be excited by Captain America lately than I have in a while.
I think it's interesting though now because we've been saying how it's amazing that this is a book called Captain America, but now Bucky's Captain America. I think we have to accept
it's totally
that.
Captain America, yeah. And then I buy that, and I like that. And I don't care that he has a gun, so suck it.
Cool. Superman?
I love this issue. Superman 680. I completely love this arc and this issue especially. I love that Superman has a pulse and that he's actually interesting. And this might have been the best issue of the arc so far.
Oh, I think it was. Definitely. It was really good. I think some of the stuff, the way that Superman acted in the middle, like some of the dialogue he said was kind of odd to me, but I liked his, I don't know, he was just a little, like when he calls it, like, all right, little, like he was kind of rude to the Zatara kid.
Right.
Like, oddly. I was like, wow, he's being kind of a bitch. And that struck me, but I really like the scenes of him and Lois as, you know, Clark and the flashback scenes. Mm-hmm. And then he tells the Metropolis that they have a dog. He's your dog too. And they're like, are we happy about that? Yes, we are.
I really liked that. I thought this was really good. And then I think we're going right into next is New Krypton, which is just what links all the books together, so that'll be interesting.
All right.
Yeah. That's a fun issue. I liked it much more than the last one.
Cool.
Well, if you feel like, well, maybe I missed out on Superman or Captain America or Nova or any other books, you can go to Discount Comic Book Service because they've got monthly specials up to 75,000% off. That would be amazing. They would send you money. Monthly specials up to 75% off with 40% off major publishers, flat rate shipping for $5.95 on all U.S. orders. You can buy anything that's listed in previews. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock available for order. You can track your orders online at going www.dcbservice.com.
Cool.
75,000% off.
I'd use them. So if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can check out all the comics that are released each week, and you can, you know, do your pull list, and then after the books come out, you can rate them and leave a review, and we like to kind of spotlight some the community's reviews. So I wanted to talk about one this week. The Next Champion wrote about Deadpool number 2, of which she gave the story a 4 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 12.5% of the iFanboy community made it their pick, which I thought was interesting. And what he writes about Deadpool was, so after 2 issues in, it might be safe to say that this is going to be a great run with Daniel Way on board. He knows how to write Deadpool. The art fits the style of the book, and overall is a fun time around when reading this. Some say it hurts the series that it has to start off as a tie-in arc, but I say the series will work in its own right once we get the invasion out of the picture. I haven't been this happy for a Deadpool book since the first Cable and Deadpool issue so many years ago. Don't miss this funny and entertaining book at your local comic store, and you'll regret that you did. Daniel Way is not a good writer. And I think that Next Champion and other people who like this are just blinded by the fact that they get anything with Deadpool in it. So,
have you read it?
Fuck no. Nice. No, I am gonna go back and read it. I'm gonna check it out. But when I saw, because I do like Deadpool and I would check it out, but when I heard Daniel Way was on it, I said I'm not gonna touch that with a 10-foot pole. So, but that's just me.
Everybody has their writers who they don't want to go near.
Yeah, exactly.
My list is big.
Deadpool is one of those characters I've never ever had any affinity towards, nor interest in any form whatsoever.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think it definitely takes a certain, you know, interest to like him and to swallow him.
I was gonna let it go.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a tough one, but. All right, so go to ifanboy.com/comics and leave a review of the books that you checked out. And also, let's dive into our email.
Jesse Rios writes in and says he's an avid follower of us guys. Thank you. I picked up Why the Last Man because of the constant good reviews I kept hearing regarding BKV's writing and characters. This run contained what is, to me, the single most wow, holy shit moment that I've ever experienced in a long time. I haven't felt for a character as much as I did for Yurik in issue number 58, and he totally caught me off guard. To quote Ron, he ripped out my heart. Which leads to my question, what single most comic book moment, whether reveal, payoff, or stunner, tugs at your heart and stays with you till this very day? In my earlier years, I would have said the death of Phoenix or Captain Marvel, or more recently of Jean Loring as the killer in Identity Crisis, as moments that really stand out as solid payoffs. So come on, guys, pick one.
That's a really good question.
Yeah. And you've just tainted the waters because I'm like, I don't know.
Gene Loring.
Probably. I didn't know who Gene Loring was at the time.
Dr. Like, Phoenix.
Who is that?
Well, I mean, it's hard because it's hard to remember one in the realm of superheroes. But I mean, most recently, my epic weeping on the train while reading Strangers in Paradise is probably the one that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of Strangers in Paradise, when you got very, very emotional. But that's a different kind of story, so I don't know. I don't know if that counts. What about you?
It's hard because in superhero stuff, it'll be retconned out in 6 months.
It just doesn't matter, right?
Or it doesn't. I would say normally I'd say that the whole death of Jason Todd storyline, even though I didn't like him, was heart-wrenching anyway. But then, he's back and alive, so how heart-wrenching is that?
Yeah,
it's hard to say. I'm trying to think of other stuff, but it's coming up empty.
Well, what about when Captain America died? Did that get you?
If I hadn't seen it on CNN in the papers all day, and that shithead I worked with hadn't said it to me the second I walked in the morning.
I remember that. That was awesome.
Oh, I'm so pissed off about it still. Like, because that would have
not
been
awesome.
I think that would have been great.
Yeah.
Would have been one of those moments where you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
But it was ruined.
I'll never know. I really don't know if there was a better one than the moment that he's talking about in Why the Last Man. And I don't want to say what it is because
it was a good moment.
I was utterly and completely taken aback, but it was also completely appropriate. And I was like, oh, that hurts me so deeply.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think I have a better answer than that. So I think I'm going to be with him.
All right.
Which is kind of a cheat, but he tainted the waters by suggesting it.
All right. So if you have any questions that you want us to ask, you can shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com.
Very nice.
I changed the accent on the email address. So contact@ifanboy.com.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. Would you like some music? Well, then you should go to eMusic. And if you specifically go to eMusic.com/ifanboy, and that is a music subscription service where you can sign up at a monthly fee to get a certain number of downloads of all their music they have. And there's like this great catalog of indie and mainstream and classic music and all this stuff. And you can download DRM-free MP3s, which means that you can do any damn thing you want with them. Share them, keep them, you put them on as many computers as you want. You don't have to ever fill in a password or anything, which is a beautiful thing. And you can see at emusic.com/ifanboy, you can see a selection of stuff that we picked out, music that we like, but there's also a lot more to get from there. What's also fun is that if you like one thing, there's all these great suggestions. People who like this took this, and you can preview all the stuff on the site, and it's a great service. There's tons of good stuff, and if you're sort of bored with the music, it's a really good way to find new things.
Cool.
At a good price.
All right. So onto the voicemail. Our first voicemail comes from somebody here in New York.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Mike from Queens. The male episode was really good, man. Some of them are really funny. Some of them actually explain like how you guys are and anything that I have a comic book question. That's not that about comic books. It's pretty good. You guys in the episode, you guys mentioned about lettering in the comic books, and how about Sandman? Isn't that a good example about the letterings that you use? Or I remember, for Delirium, that she has, color bubbles, background on her Saving Bubble and stuff. And I think every one of the Endless probably have a different lettering, right? And our question is, when are you guys going to do another live show? I started watching you guys after you guys did the last live show, so I was wondering if you guys are ever going to do another one again. Give it a word. Later.
Well, Mike, you're not wrong about that. That's Todd Klein who lettered those, and he kind of Todd Klein is the old man of lettering right now, and he won Eisner's for, well, just about every year he's ever done anything, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
He's the Dave Stewart of lettering. Oh, he's up for an Eisner? You win. No, if you're in the category for lettering with Todd Klein, just go home.
Oh, God. I can say things.
Richard Starkings hates him. Oh, that Klein's a bastard. No, no, I love him. He's a great guy.
But no, but I thought that was a good observation that we didn't mention on the show when we talked about lettering. that the lettering style of Sandman was very distinctive and used as a tool to get across the characters, and that I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. So
it's funny because you always look at it, I would always look at Dream's dialogue, which is sort of the reverse black on white with the squibbly, which by the way would be a pain in the ass to do digitally.
Josh is mired in lettering right now.
it really made me think about what Dream would sound like based on that.
Yeah, totally.
I never nailed down in my head, but it made me think about it, which is, I guess, the intent.
Yeah. So, live show.
Oh, we don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, not so much.
You know what? No, we realize we haven't done one this year. Because honestly, we've bottled it every damn time we've tried.
But we've been busy.
That too. But there's no reason to avoid it. We actually were talking about this recently, and we want to try to do another one before the end of the year.
And probably in the New York metro area, New York City. So if you live in New York City and you want us to, let us know.
Mm-hmm. So, it's definitely not out of the cards, and we you know, got to get back on the horse sometime.
Yeah, totally. It can't go wrong every time.
Yeah. We're testing the boundaries of that theory.
So if you have any questions for us that you want to call in, leave a voicemail, call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697, and be sure to be brief, about 30 seconds, and don't forget to leave your name and where you're from. So, yay.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. That's right. A lot of shit.
That was a lot of show. Oh,
Ron, you're back.
I'm back. Apparently, despite everybody not wanting me to come back, so that was nice. That was nice to come back from vacation too. it was funny to listen to your own podcast and you're not on it to hear somebody else talking. And Sonia did a good job. I thought I laughed a couple of times. So, good job, Sonia.
Is it true you forced her to watch 90210?
No, she offered. All right, Jesus. I was like, I got to download 90210 because I don't have cable. And she goes, you can come over and watch it at my place. I'm like, okay. And then she's just like telling everybody, I pitied Ron. I let him come over and watch. It's like, whatever. She had fun. She won't admit it, though.
So, before we get out of here, we wanted to mention that the three of us, made our dramatic podcast debut on a show called Geek by Night, which can be found at geekshow.us, which is www.geekshow.us. We were in episode 6 of Geek by Night, Raiders of the Lost Comics, and we have a little cameo about 25 minutes into the episode playing comic store patrons. And yes, it was a lot of fun. So thank you.
It was a very well done production. So it was fun to listen to.
I would like some more takes of my reading.
Yeah, it would have been better if I heard that. It's hard to do it. The way we did it, it's a little difficult. And but it was fun.
Flew us out there. We were all on a soundstage together. And wait, that's not what happened at all.
It was Skywalker Ranch, wasn't it?
I believe so. And Church just wouldn't stop talking. Yeah. Blah, 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 neck, blah, 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 neck.
All right, so you, and if you were on ifanboy.com this week, you would have seen the post pointing you to Geek by Night, and you could have checked it out. So be sure to go to ifanboy.com every day to check out all the great writing that's there. You can see my pick of the week review as well as all the other great writing from other writers, including Sonia and Paul and Jim and Mike and Chris from Around Comics and Paul Dini and just the whole crew, as well as me, Josh and Connor every now and then. So ifanboy.com, where it's at.
And while you're there, you can check out the store, which is the links to the products that we do, and you buy those from Amazon through us, which helps the show out. And there's just some recommendations we put on there, and in video shows and all that stuff. Go look at the store. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday is iFanboy, the video show, and you can find that on iFanboy.com or revision3.com/iFanboy. And this past week we did the manga episode, yes, where we did our little manga experiment where we asked for suggestions and you guys gave us some, and we picked the most popular ones and read those, and it was interesting.
Yeah, and then next Wednesday, we're going back into the vault and talking about some books that have been on our shelves that we've been meaning to talk about for a while, so it should be fun.
Yes, good time. So that's every Wednesday in the afternoon on the Eastern Coast, yeah. ifanboy.com.
And this week, you can look forward to the iFanboy Minis every weekday, but this will be the last week of the Minis, which were a crap load of fun and a lot of fun, but they were a ton of work. And we may go back to the format in some way at some time, but they're going to be done for now.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting experiment in doing short form video and comics and all that sort of stuff. We did almost 150 of them. So
it will be 145.
Yeah, 145. So
every damn day.
So thank you to everyone who watched them and enjoyed them. We really appreciate it.
Feedback, yeah. And like, it's just so fun to be able to do something just like that, you know, and every day. But the upside of it is we are going to have more time to do other. They don't look like it, but they do take a lot of time in terms of production and uploading and doing all the stuff that has to do with them. You know, you got to move upward and onward. So thanks again, everybody. And we'll have something just as good.
Yeah, and it's definitely not anything that we want anybody to be upset about or worried about or anything like that. We like Josh said, it's going to give us a lot of time to do even more cooler, different stuff every day like we've been doing. We're trying pretty much everything we can to make iFanboy.com as much fun for you all as we can, and we'll try new things, and some things we'll stop doing, some things we'll do new things. So it's definitely a good thing.
I'm going to start podcasting with my pants on.
Awesome, finally.
Yeah. It's a new year, new leaf.
Never make me.
But I will wear a shirt as I always have, and I usually wear my iFanboy shirt that I got from jinx.com/iFanboy. You can get the iFanboy logo with the intern on the back. And if you get that, send us a picture with you wearing it, send it to jinx.com, and they'll send you free stickers.
Yay.
Yay.
And as mentioned before, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
What, you didn't see the J next to that?
Well, I forgot.
I'm going off script. Social networks, you listen to ifanboy.com/about. There it is. That's how you can link with us. You can virtually network with us.
Where, Josh? Where?
MySpace, ComicSpace, Verb, Facebook, Twitter, all those places.
Awesome.
But you'll have to go to ifanboy.com/about to find those links. But you should, because that's where the kids are at. What I hear.
@.com/about.
Yes. There's a little thing there about where
we
are.
I realized that. The kids are having the about page.
I live there.
you're hitting refresh constantly.
Otherwise, I get lost.
Oh, he forgets what we look like. If you like the show, you can write a review on iTunes, or even better than that, you can tell your friends, you can tell your comic store guys, you can tell anybody you want. You can leave a review on iTunes for this show and for the video show. We appreciate that, especially for the video show. It helps get the word out there, and you can do that on the iTunes place on the way, interwebs.
Cool. And
I don't know where I was going at the end there.
And if you do like what we do and you do enjoy all the great content that we deliver to you free of charge, head over to ifanboy.com/donations and you can click on the donation links and you could donate through PayPal. They take credit cards and everything. And we've got some recommended donations, as well as you can donate any amount that you like. And we appreciate everyone who has donated. And definitely be on the lookout in the future for some cool stuff coming from us.
Yes. In regards to that.
Yes.
But seriously. About the donation page, /donations.
Yes.
Seriously. Thought we were kidding before? Not.
All right. So, well, it's good to be back. You know, you get a little rusty after not doing the podcast for a week.
I don't know. When Sony was here, we had minis. Now you're back and we don't.
I don't know about that, Ron.
You're the glum wave of doom. You're like, you know what, you are the show's Galactus.
I hunger.
You show up, and maybe you're not a bad dude, but you're a hungry dude, and it means you're fucking shit up.
I hunger.
Yes, you do, probably, don't you?
I do, a lot.
If there was a planet and or a cake right there, you would probably consume it.
Yes, I would, without even hesitation. So,
who will fight for the cake? Where is the cake Fantastic Four?
The cake four. That's funny. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
That's always really – when you make a joke and somebody doesn't laugh but they say that's funny, that's great.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm Josh.
Take your persecution complex and I'm not going to absorb your stress output anymore. Don't you pimp out my heart. Don't you pimp out my heart.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. in your mind about it. And like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it. You know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.